hello and welcome to another episode of Screen One for the UK Film Review Podcast. I am your host, Andy Furlong. Now, just a heads up, we are going to have a pretty limited version of the show this week as I have been away on holidays and haven't seen as much in the last week or two as I would have liked or would have normally seen. And you know, this isn't the Mark Kermode and Simon Mayo show where I can get people to fill in for me while I am on holiday. I mean, I probably could, but you know, got to give the people what they want, baby. And that's me shiting on about film. That's probably a good tagline right there, actually. Listen to Screen One where he shites on about film. But anyway, without further ado, we are going to go straight to our film this week, and that is Godzilla Resurgence, as they're calling it here. Godzilla Resurgence. Sorry, I've just lost our entire audience of Japanese listeners with that terrible impression. So, Godzilla Resurgence, or Shin Godzilla, as it was called, I think I much prefer that, actually, is a Japanese reboot of their famed gigantic monster Godzilla, and it actually, interestingly enough, marks the first time they have rebooted the franchise without at least treating the original movie as canon. There have been numerous sequels, of course, but apparently most of them ignored all the other sequels and just referenced the original. Well, Shin Godzilla is their first complete reboot of the story, in Japan at least, because of course we have had the USA films from 2014 and 1998, the latter of course most memorable for the Jiramaquai and P. Diddy songs that accompanied the soundtrack rather than the movie itself, although to be fair, I thought it was fine. Now, Shin Godzilla poses the question, what would happen if Godzilla showed up in Japan in modern day? And the film comes at it from an angle that I quite liked, and that angle is this: how can the government even come up with a plan to stop this creature? I mean, one of the things that has always fascinated me about Godzilla and movies in general is in how something that affected somebody deeply, in this case a whole nation deeply, can be channeled to create something so unique and abstract as almost a kind of coping mechanism to deal with events. As I keep saying, Nocturnal Animals is a great film about that very subject. In the case of the original Godzilla, it is, of course, tied into World War II and, of course, infamously, the nuclear bomb that was dropped on Hiroshima. Just think about that for a second, that something like that probably became ingrained in the cultural psyche can give us a movie like Godzilla, a movie about a nuclear-powered monster that brings mass destruction to Japan. This kind of transference of feelings and ideas into art is really fascinating to me, and is a reason why I don't have a problem with any subject matter, no matter how tasteless on the surface, being incorporated into a movie story, because you just never know what it can create. But back to Shin Godzilla, it's a modern movie, and with it comes modern problems, and that is the extreme levels of bureaucracy and red tape that are involved in getting anything done to stop the monster himself. It's kind of like I, Daniel Blake, the monster movie version in a way. First, they try to decide whose jurisdiction the problem falls under. He's a sea monster, is it the Navy? Is it animal control? They kind of spend the first while trying to identify what it even is. They even have to go through so many different channels to even launch an attack and so on. It's all this kind of bureaucracy, as I have said. The movie is too contrasting things, really. A lot of it is set in rooms with talking heads discussing what is the best thing to do, how do we stop this monster, while we occasionally get scenes of the destruction the beast causes early on, which increase in frequency as the movie continues. And the scenes with Godzilla plays out certainly with a reverence to the original movies in mind. It definitely feels like a homage to the past movies in both how the monster moves and smashes things up. Now, here's one of the things that bothered me about the movie, and that is the effects. It felt really, really weird. It felt like bad CGI, but reenacting scenes from the movie from the 50s, both in feel and look. Godzilla just looks really weird in this at times. And I found out that they deliberately tried to mirror how the monster looked and moved in the past, even going as far as to making the CGI look rubber. And I wish if they were going to do that they instead went down the miniature route, because a CGI version made to kind of look like that just looks pretty hideous in my opinion, which is a shame, because we do get some occasionally really good set pieces, but it just looks really bad with CGI most of the time. And what also begins to happen is that the scenes of everybody scrambling to get things sorted in how they're going to deal with things, as I mentioned, I mean, it's a great idea on paper, and I love stuff like that, and but it just gets a bit tedious, to be honest. It's the kind of satire that I don't like, and I guess while the original Godzilla was a response to World War II, this one definitely incorporates things from their recent history, like the government's failure to deal with the Fukushima nuclear disaster. That side of things got pretty tedious after a while, and I guess while it will resonate with some people, it just went on too long for me. There is a good film I seen recently called The Tunnel. That's this kind of disaster movie about a guy who, funnily enough, gets trapped in a tunnel, which also deals with the bureaucracy involved in his rescue, and I thought that worked quite well. On paper, it seems like a golden idea that would work wonderfully with Godzilla, and I applaud the effort, but it didn't work for me. And like I say, the more blockbuster scenes felt flat for me as well because of how dodgy the CGI is. Shin Godzilla is an interesting idea and addition to the formula that just didn't work for me overall.
This game, it's a rabbit hole. After only four moves, there's more than 300 billion options to consider. We can take you very close to the edge.
I taught him to move like this.
He taught himself. If I take the pieces away, he just keeps playing in his head day and night.
I can tell you he has great potential.
American chess prodigy Bobby Fischer became the youngest ever grandmaster in the history of the game.
Where do you go from here?
I want to play the Russians. You're the best in the world, and I'm going to beat them all.
Fischer Mania is taking the country by storm.
My next guest, Mr. Bobby Fischer.
Mr. Fischer?
Are you a patriot? There are people in high places who take an interest in any confrontation
with the Russians.
I don't really care about politics.
You're the one man in this country who could put up a fight.
Bobby Fischer is in Iceland for his match with the world champion Boris Spassky.
It's the chess version of a 15-round heavyweight prize fight.
In Screen 2 this week, we have Pawn Sacrifice, directed by Edward Zwick, a director who always seems to do a good job in anything he touches. I wouldn't say he's a great director, but he is a very good one. And he's a director you could certainly probably trust him with any type of film, really. He's a very good all-rounder. What I really like about him is how he often pairs historical events or history with blockbuster type qualities and knows exactly which is the more entertaining thing to focus on. I mean, sure, he will give you the historical context to get you emotionally invested, but he's a director who knows that people are more interested in being entertained and don't want to get bogged down with too much preaching. I mean, think about Blood Diamond, The Last Samurai, Defiance, all built around serious subject matters, but at their core, extremely fun, blockbuster type of movies that are just really fun to watch. Well, Pawn Sacrifice is set during the Cold War and tells the story of chess prodigy Bobby Fischer and his quest to be champion of the world in chess, and in particular, his legendary matches against Boris Spassky. Bobby Fischer is played by Tobey Maguire, and Spassky is played by probably one of the most underrated guys around today, Liv Schreiber. The guy is brilliant every time he shows up, and yet has never seemed to get an iconic role to do him justice, which is a shame, because I hope he will. The film is also filled with some other talented character actors like Peter Sarsgaard and Michael Stahlberg. Now, Tobey Maguire, for me, is a perfect example of an actor who, if cast right, can really add something to a role. With Maguire, I find, if he is cast in something outside his comfort zone, he usually flops. But if the casting makes use of his kind of blank slate, sense of innocence, and being overwhelmed, bug-eyed type of acting style, he can probably do it better than most if cast right. I mean, we have seen it in The Great Gatsby recently. And the Cider House Rules is another example of it. In Pawn Sacrifice, it works. And not only does it work, you could argue that it is the best use of Maguire yet, as his bug-eyed approach to acting really brings something. When paired with Bobby Fischer's level of stress and paranoia and other elements that are brought into the film later on, it actually really works that Maguire at his best plays characters out of touch with something. Well, in this, he's kind of out of touch with reality at times, and it works. Zwick also does an amazing job of making chess seem exciting and capturing the cultural zeitgeist of the time, in particular between the Cold War, between America and Russia, and how it was much more than a chess game. It was a battle for nations. And people say all the time that certain sports can't be made into a movie, but then you watch something like Pawn Sacrifice that blows that argument out of the water. I mean, don't get me wrong, it's not a sensational film by any means, but it is a good solid one that makes chess entertaining in that type of sports movie way, and manages to kind of capture some of the levels of stress involved and the kind of psychology and mental toll it takes to achieve something approaching greatness. Edward Zwick was the right director for this movie. I think the casting is right. It's just a good solid movie that is very easy to watch, and most importantly, a word that seems to be forgotten nowadays, it's entertaining.